Welcome to the Sell or Die Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Gittimer. Well, in this podcast, we're going to help you attract more qualified, unbelievable, ready-to-buy clients. And the one thing you're hoping for, close more deals. It's time to sell or die. Good morning, diehards. We're going to speak with someone today who is a serial entrepreneur. And I don't mean like Captain Crunch. I'm talking about a real live entrepreneur who has his fingers in a lot of different pies. And the reason he's been so successful, his main quality is that he is not Native American. Because when people come here from other countries, they work their asses off with their families predominantly, and they begin to rise in a place where you can rise that we as Americans take it for granted. So welcome, Ali. I don't know how to say your last name, and I want to make sure I got it right.
Hemyari. Ali Hemyari.
Oh, that's pretty easy. So what was it like to emigrate from some other country and then have to make this your own land?
I was pretty young when it had happened. My father had attended grad school I'm from Iran, and my father had attended grad school at University of Dallas right before the revolution in Iran. And when the revolution...
That was in the 70s?
Yes, sir, correct. That was in the 70s. Okay. And Iran was a big ally to the United States, and a lot of good trade back and forth, and some freedom to come and go for Americans to go vacation there and build relationships business-wise, especially in the oil industry. And so when he came back to Iran, he saw that there was a shift in the leadership and decided, well, this cleric-based religious shift is not going to be a good fit for his family. So yeah, we immigrated to the United States.
Just to clarify that, he said shift, S-H-I-F-T, not correct. Shit. But it turned out to be both the same.
That's right. Amen to that.
So tell me, what do you do right now?
So I run a portfolio of businesses, mainly centered around the pet industry. We are in the high-end dog training space. We have multiple dog softwares, including kennel management software and point of sale systems. We have online dog training. We have an aviation side of our business where we can fly ultra high net worth clients around in planes. It's a true FAA carrier. And so it's been an interesting...
Are you talking about dogs, like Cavalier, King Charles, Spaniels, that kind of thing?
Talking about Cavalier, King Charles, all the way up to personal protection and executive protection dogs. Aha. For clients. And so depending on the client, what they have, we'll train them. And we've trained the smallest of dogs, like Chihuahuas, all the way up to federal level law enforcement dogs. So it's a pretty diverse facility.
So when the dog is walking around my baggage claim area, when I come in from overseas and it says, don't pet this dog, I'm assuming they're looking for dope, correct?
Well, sometimes they're looking for dope. Sometimes they're looking for nuts, barks of trees, and other things that are not really admissible into the country without declaration, especially the beagles that you see running around those treadmills, you know, or the conveyor belts. Yeah, they're usually looking for tree nuts and things like that that are not supposed to be imported.
Wow, that's cool. And you teach those, you teach like tree nuts are bad. You have like signs and everything in the classroom and the dogs are sitting there.
You know, we, many years ago along that note, we trained a dog for a young child who had a tree allergy, a tree nut allergy. It was like peanuts. And so the parents were worried about lunch table trades. And so people that were trading their, kids that were trading their chips for gummy bears and so on.
Yeah.
The parents were kind of worried about that because it was fatal to the child. So we trained a dog to detect peanuts, peanut butter, peanut oil, and peanut proteins, and to accompany him to school every day where he can then have those lunch table trades without fear of a fatality. So yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's amazing what you can train a dog to do. I have my algorithm on Instagram has dogs and cats. And I look at these Australian shepherds. They're like humans. Mm-hmm. They're
very bright. Very bright.
Really bright. So do you choose a brand of dog based on their intellectual capacity?
We tend to choose high aptitude dogs because they make training so much simpler. They're eager to please. They crave the knowledge, just like any other high drive, low drag person would as well. And so there are some dogs that are just genetically predisposed to have that type of personality and temperament that's fit for that type of work as well.
I wonder if you can equate that to the human element of this, because there's my listeners, where I refer to them as diehards. And sure. I don't ever use plural because usually one person is listening at a time. So I go diehard. If you have a pet, are you taking full advantage of your pet's intellectual capacity? Or are you just taking them out for a walk when they need it?
It's interesting.
I'm teaching my cat how to give a kiss.
What's interesting about that is the philosophy of dog companionship in America is very different from dog companionship in Europe. In Europe, you'll see an 85-year-old lady walking down the street of Paris with a Great Dane that's probably double her size, on or off leash, through hundreds of people, on or off subways without any problem at all. And in the United States, what you see is somebody will open their front door and then Fido's booking it down the street and you got to go jump in your station wagon and go chase after them. Why is that? And I think that we tend to overhumanize the dog when it's a completely different species, right? They are part of our family. We love them. But there are some boundaries that the Europeans do a really good job of setting. And us Americans don't do the best job of that. And so I am grateful that that is the case, Mr. Gittimer, because it keeps us in business and allows us to be successful.
I love seeing dogs run wild down the street.
It's a phone call every day.
I learned a very valuable lesson when I was a teenager, not quite 17. We got a dog, a puppy, and we lived on the busiest street in town. And one morning, as I'm opening up the door to get the morning paper, the dog got out, a little puppy, and started to run away. And I started to chase the dog across the street, the traffic, everything. I couldn't get her. I go back, run back to the house, tell my dad, "Dad, dog's gone. You get a dog." And my father, very calm, he goes, "No problem, son. We'll get in the car. We'll go find the dog." I spin around to get in the car and I trip over the dog.
Oh, wow.
Then I started to run away from the dog. The dog chased me.
Yeah. It became a game, right?
Well, here's the deal. 40 years later, I tell my audience, chasing your customers too hard. Some of them running away from you. Maybe you need to run the other way and let the customer chase you.
Yeah, to your point, that's the classic sales takeaway, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're chasing them too hard, you probably shouldn't be wasting your time. There's plenty of other opportunities out there that you can go and interact with and engage. Rather than spinning
wheels. Are airports your biggest customer? Are police departments your biggest customer?
My biggest group of clients are really the general public that wants a better, well-trained dog that is tired of wasting 1 hour a day, several times a week for 8 to 10 weeks with a trainer at a pet store, at their home, or at a park, and hoping to get results. What we offer is a turnkey product where you drop off your dog to us, we handle all of the training, and then at the end, we put the client through a class teaching them everything we taught their dog, and then we send them home with resources. They get a tutorial video. They have access to our online dog training website, which has over 600 videos on it, and they get a video of their dog doing everything. Like, the days of you wasting your time are kind of over. We don't, what we want to try to explain to people is that you can't be great at everything. It's not possible for me to teach somebody to be a dog trainer in an hour once a week for 8 to 10 weeks. It's just not possible. What inevitably happens is you learn something a little bit askew, you practice it a little bit askew, and then the next session, we're spending the next hour reversing what you trained into your dog a little bit askew every single day of that week. So why not just bring it to trainers that do this for a living, that are set up to do it, working with your dog several times a day, all 7 days a week, and then turning you over a foundation that you can springboard off of. And that is really the secret sauce. I think that people are busy, they got families, they got careers. And so what happens is the dog falls to the bottom of the totem pole in their life. And they really need a service like ours that when we lay them that foundation and we tell them, look, do this twice a day at 10 minutes. They can rock and roll and they'll be way more successful than everything else they've tried, inclusive of YouTube videos and their buddies giving them advice and even their veterinarians chiming in every once in a while, Right.
So that's cool. So you've developed this Uber expertise and turned it into money.
You know, one thing about being an entrepreneur, and I don't have to explain this to you, is what's fascinating about the business world is you can take an idea out of thin air. And if there's demand for it and you can create processes and a product and have good people surrounding yourself, you can make it really successful and fulfill that demand. And that's what I love about the business world, that there's so many neat and interesting things that you can come across in niches like ours and be ultimately successful and live the American dream that everybody else is looking for. What people don't get with that is being an entrepreneur is like being Captain America. You're grabbing your shield every day. You got, you know, competitors hating on you. You got clients that you're working with. You got employees that you're managing. You obviously have financial risk because you made investments into maybe a building and, you know, the other things, the vehicles and things that you need. And I think that that part is the difficult part. But once you learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable, that will make you inevitably successful. And so, you know, every morning eating your frog is really what counts.
Tell me who you use as a mentor. Are you in a mastermind? What do you do to keep yourself on top of your game?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one thing I discovered when I was a lot younger is, you know, they say you're only as successful as your five best friends. And I realized I need some new friends. And so I was intentional about some of the clients that I was working with and some of the friends that I had that were very much, they were more successful than me in so many different ways, mm-hmm. not just financially, but spiritually and family, yep. things like that. I made it intentional to go and build stronger relationships with them and ask them questions. And they became my de facto mentors. And that's been invaluable when you find somebody that's really good, that has accomplished so much in their life that you want to, you know, emulate in so many ways, that you can ask them questions to prevent yourself from falling into holes and use that wisdom to guide you rather than being smart and falling into the holes yourself.
I agree. I have been very successful with mentors, and diehard, I want you to listen very carefully. I never have asked anyone to please be my mentor. I've earned a relationship with them. I've earned a friendship with them. And we exchange information, even though I need theirs more than they need mine. They like to hang around with me. And when you have that as part of your noblesse oblige or your savoir faire, you become attractive to somebody who has made it. Like, I like this guy. I want to hang around this guy. He's funny. He's nice. He's intellectual. And I don't, you know, Ali and I do not know each other very well, but I guarantee you he never sat on somebody's doorstep and said, will you be my mentor? I guarantee it.
Right. Well, you know, that point is so profound and strong. And as you reach a higher and deeper understanding of business, what you realize is that relationships are dire to your success and you have to put in the time. And that reciprocity shows the true love for each other.
Yeah.
And that build of that foundation. And I think that that's where people just fall short. They just, it's gimme, 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 and they become takers.
Exactly. They're takers. But here's the deal. When the relationship morphs into a friendship, you have a genuine mentor. Every mentor that I've had, and I've been blessed with a half a dozen of them that were life-changing people for me, they were all my friends. And in varying degrees, obviously, but for some, I was like their son.
That's right. That's
and
funny.
You put yourself in that winning position by offering them value, not simply taking their value.
That's right.
Diehard, if you've ever read the book Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand describes people in two categories, givers and looters, not givers and takers. And you have to put yourself in the same position. What are you taking versus what are you giving? And if you can give more, and I guarantee you, Ali's a giver. Giver in the community, giver in his business, has done many things for many people that have made them feel better about who they are. And that's just a feeling.
I think that that's what you see. Very successful people are intentional about that. And I think it's the gift from God that you're supposed to steward, right? And so if you're early on in your business career, or if you're in sales, but Dale Carnegie said it best in How to Win Friends and Influence People is be genuinely interested in other people. And that authenticity carries back over. And that's your win. That's what everybody's looking for. And I think we need to get back to that in the United States.
No argument. Dale Carnegie also said, don't criticize, condemn, or complain.
That's right.
That's what they use as a mantra at the Dale Carnegie Organization. Unfortunately, many of the franchisees criticize, condemn, and complain, but that's a whole other issue. They don't say the whole quote. It's easy to criticize, condemn, and complain, and most fools do.
That's right.
So much better.
It is. You know, this morning prior to being on your show, I was at the yearly governor's prayer, and that brings in a wealth of business people, politicians, very powerful people from across the state of Tennessee all together for a Christ-based togetherness. And one of the comments that they had a keynote speaker on there, Walker Zimmerman, who's a Major League Soccer player. And he said, I got injured. I've made mistakes, but you learn to suffer gracefully. And to your point of the complaining and condemning, like, learn to suffer gracefully. Take it as a win. You don't learn by victories. You learn by your failures.
Well, and you can learn from other people. You learn lessons both ways, but the failure ones are much harder.
Much harder.
I heard Diane von Furstenberg give a speech. I'm in the American Express Black Card Club.
So am I.
They invite you to these events.
Yeah.
But Diane von Furstenberg, she reinvented women's fashion. She invented the wrap dress, which is in the 70s, and it's still vogue. And she started out her speech saying, I never really knew what I wanted to do, but I always knew who I wanted to become. And I literally started to cry.
Yeah.
She had it down in one sentence. And I think that so many people have no idea who they want to become, that they spend all their life in what they are doing. And it's a waste of their life and time.
And talent. Waste of talent, too. Right?
Yeah, totally. I have to show you something because I represent the Old Testament. You represent the New Testament. But we both have the same favorite quote in the Bible. And it's in your book. It's Matthew's quote, O ye of little faith. When, you know, the waters are rising and choppy, and Jesus goes upstairs and goes, what do you guys, lose faith? And he looks over at the water and goes, hey, calm down. And it does.
That's right.
I have faith, but I start with faith in myself, and then I can transpose that to faith in others, because no one's going to follow me unless they're certain that my belief is deep.
That's right. I agree with you. We run our businesses faith-based, not oppressive, but with that deep value system. And I think that our employees are happier that way. They understand the fairness, the consistency. They understand the transparency. They understand there's just so much to it that we could discuss, but it is really a powerful thing to have in your life.
And the challenge is, not do other people consider you a good person. Do you consider yourself a good person?
That's right.
You're alone in the bathroom mirror in the morning with the most important person in the world. That's where you pass judgment on yourself and your actions or your deeds or your words. And it's the most difficult thing to face. Most people do not. In my bathroom, if you ever come over, I have post-it notes with my goals on the bathroom mirror. So every morning I see what I'm supposed to do. I don't put them in a book. I don't put them anywhere. I just put them on the bathroom mirror. I get out of the shower and I go, holy shit, I got to start working on this more.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way to fly.
Your version of your daily affirmations, right?
Totally.
I have two young children, and every morning we go through the same thing. I'm smart, I'm strong, I'm confident, and I can do anything I put my mind to every single day, and sometimes multiple times a day.
Love that. How old are your kids?
I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, almost 2-year-old.
Boys or girls?
One girl who's almost 2 and one boy who's 6.
Cool.
They're the best.
Yeah, I'm all girls all the time.
Yeah.
But
there's something special about it. I'll say there's something. They're snugglers.
Little girls love their daddies.
They do.
Period.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, and I'm sure you know it now. Boys will jump off the back of a sofa and break their legs. Girls try on dresses and make sure their shoes match.
That's right. Yeah, well, it's taught me a lot of patience.
Oh yeah.
Being a parent has been one of the most impactful moments in my life in a positive way, but it has taught me how to deal with a lot of people in a different way. When I was younger, I was very bullish, and it was let's make a decision and move on really quickly. And sometimes those business decisions were good. Sometimes they were terrible, but it didn't matter. They were in my rearview mirror. And as you have children, you just start discovering, well, you know, that might be a good idea. Let me think on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that you build this being pensive much stronger after you become a father or a mother.
Stay on after we're done. I need to give you a few thoughts about children and how I have four daughters, four granddaughters, and a great granddaughter. I'm wow. all the time.
That's so awesome.
I have a set of rules that I use for my daughters because they're twins, and mm-hmm. I have twins and another girl from a first marriage. And I had to develop rules for twins because they're alike. They're exactly alike, and you can't treat one better than the other. You can't give one anything you don't give the other. Huge.
Right. Yeah.
So I learned a bunch of rules, and Die Hard, if you are interested in those rules, just put something in the chat and I'll try to do a program on rules for children.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. My cousin just had twins.
Oh, yeah?
And she's 43 years old. By the grace of wow. God, she had twins, and not through IVF or anything. Very, very unique. And
that's cool.
You know, prior to having the baby, she was like, what's your advice? And I was like, I mean, get as much sleep as you can.
No, listen, I'll record a separate thing just for you on advice for twins.
That's right. That's awesome. That'd be great. A
couple of other things before we go, though.
Sure.
Your business is now successful. How much of your daily life as being involved in the business have you been able to delegate?
You know, early on, I spent good 16 to 18 hour days, all 7 days a week for many, many, many years. Now that I'm a father and I built a business where it's growing and it's at a really good level with the really great people. I have the best staff in the whole wide world that are dependable and reliable and honest, and they're hardworking. I can do a hard stop at 2 p.m. every day. And so I can get home. I can take my son to jujitsu. I can take my daughter for a walk with the dog. And it's important to spend that family time. One of the things that I feel like is lost on these youth nowadays is that they want to jump to chapter 30, but skip the first 29 chapters. Right?
I try to be more in touch with nature. So I'll take I have a young daughter, even though I shouldn't. She'll be 15 in 2 days. But when she was younger, I'd take her to school. And in the springtime, we would stand under a cherry tree and I would shake the tree and all of the blossoms would fall all over her. And I said, whether I'm alive or whether I'm gone, every spring you shake the tree, I'll be in it.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a good memory, right? For the future.
Totally, totally. So we're both blessed. This is so cool. And hard work is something that I've dedicated my life to. I was riding to work with a mentor, CEO friend of mine who was running about $100 million business. We're in Chicago and it's like a piece of shit weather outside. And I just turned to the guys who would always pick me up and take me in like I was his son. And I'd say, you know, Mel, I've been watching you for years and everything you touch turns to gold. You are by far the luckiest person I've ever known. And without any blink or hesitation, he turned around to me and said, hard work makes luck.
There's that.
I was stunned, first of all, by how quickly he said it.
Yeah.
And I've carried that with me forever.
I wrote about that in the book. I wrote that about that in our book that it talks about you have to work hard to position yourself to be successful,
mm-hmm.
right? But there's a good scripture in the Bible, Colossians 3:23 and 3:24. And there's many scriptures in the Bible about hard work. And, you know, you have to pay your dues. And there's Jim Rohn said it best, you know, famous sales guy said, success is never owned. It is merely rented and the rent is due every day. And so that's the mindset you have to have when you're in business, when you're in sales. You have to be a warrior. Not every day is going to be a bowl of cherries, right? You got to get out there and learn how to have grit, have perseverance, have determination. And that's what will make you be successful.
One of my blessings was I got involved in this MLM thing called the People's Network back in the 90s. And they had hired Jim Rohn to be their speaker guy.
Sure.
And I went to six Jim Rohn weekends where I sat in row one next to Darren Hardy, if you know who he is. And Darren and I were like elbowing each other, taking notes. Six weekends. And of all him, just listening to him pontificate, and did he repeat himself? Sometimes, but repetition leads to mastery. I'm fine with that. I'm
That's
totally
right.
fine.
That's
But his
right.
ability to present to a group, mesmerizing. And he had no flamboyance whatsoever. Just read from his journal, stood at the platform, never walked around, funny as hell, but he timed his humor in a way that was just masterful. And so when I'm listening to a speaker, I don't just listen to what they say. I watch how they present.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge. There's so many really great speakers. There was a speaker, an author friend of mine, Matt Tenney, was telling me about yesterday that he was a keynote and he came on stage and the guy's wearing flip-flops and white t-shirt and jeans and, you know, kicks off his flip-flops and starts tossing Frisbees out to the audience. And, you know, the things that make you memorable and impactful. And Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar, all those guys came from a place where they had to develop that talent, you know, and maybe some of it was innate, but they spent a lot of time developing that talent to become exceptional.
You have no idea how much time. They'll spend 10 hours preparing a 1 hour talk. And it's because they're dedicated to excellence.
That's right.
And they don't take, they don't look at their situation as an obligation. They look at it as an opportunity. And so I've said many times, I'm in front of an audience of 500 people, and I'll say, look, 50 people in this room will be affected in a way that they've never been affected before, and they'll change their lives for the better. I do not know which 50, so I'm going to give my best to all of you. It just blows people's doors off. Like, am I one of the 50? I wonder if I'm going to, you know, and it becomes a whole transference of message process. I want my audience to say, I get it. I agree with it. I think I can do it. I'm willing to try it. Then I've transferred my message. And it's no different than someone preaching from a pulpit.
Yeah, it's up to you to be the 50, right?
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Not up to anybody else. It's up to you. And so that's the secret. People just, everybody's looking for that. What is the magic? What is the sauce? It's all in you. It's the little drunk monkey in your head.
No, it's hard fucking work. That's the secret. And people refuse to think it's that easy. They think, oh, there's some technique I got to use. No, there isn't. You got to get up earlier than everybody else. You got to go to sleep later than everybody else. And in the middle, you work your ass off.
That's right.
If you do that, you're...
Yeah. Mark Twain used to say, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Correct. That's correct. So,
Diehard,
this has been a great conversation. And I guarantee you that Ali and I are going to have another one. So I want you to take this to heart. I want you to listen to this lesson and then re-listen to it because it's going to give you inspiration to become a better person. Ali, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And you, Diehard, go out and make a sale even if your ass falls off. Thanks for listening to the show.
Don't forget to like, share.
Yeah, share with both your friends.
And subscribe to the podcast.
And remember, we have a free 22-day sales challenge. Just go to Guterman.com/sales challenge to start you on your way.